I would like to take this opportunity to greet this morning. So we have the Federal High School Training and the National Institute of Financial HQ coming to brief the committee on the registration, planning, enrollment targets in higher education institutions and further education and training colleges for 2011. And the NSFAS would actually just take us through as to the effort pursued by the structure regarding the review committee recommendation. But I've been advised by the minister that in fact that is their purview and that they will then include that in their report. At this stage, I will allow honorable members to introduce themselves, after which the department will introduce themselves and then NSFAS and then proceed with the meeting. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. I'm Nomalo Melogina, the member of the Federal Committee. Okay, the whip of the committee, thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Nolita Vuguza. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Zoha Dere, a member of the Portfolio Committee coming from Mpumalanga for the Sunrise. Yeah.
Morning. I'm Wendy Nelson. I'm from the Northwest Province.
Good morning. My name is Jake Biko. I'm a member of the committee. I come from the province of Limpopo.
Good morning. I'm Janita Crawford-Lawrence, also a committee member, and from Gauteng, Pretoria.
I'm Andreas van der Westhuizen, also a member of the committee, and I come from Stellenbosch.
Stellenbosch has since become a province.
I'm glad you noticed that it was intended.
I'm Simon Makubela from Limpopo.
Maybe the department can now introduce themselves.
I'm Zakaria Kamwana from the Department of Higher Education and Training.
Kirsty Lennon from the Department of Higher Education, Acting DDG Universities.
I'm Peggy Masaro, also from the Department of Higher Education and Training, Acting DDG for FET Colleges.
Chairperson Ashley Seymour, CEO of the NSF.
Chairperson Samayedwa Sokayise. I'm the chairperson of the board of NSFAS.
Chairperson, I'm Eugene Naidu, Special Projects Executive at NSFAS.
My name is Steve Lally, finance minister.
Comrades, we can take this moment to allow the department to make their presentation. Oh yes, there's another member who must introduce herself.
Thank you very much. My apologies, Chairperson. I went to the most important room. My name is Mushwana. And yeah, SS, thank you very much. I mean this in both higher and basic education. Thank you.
Maybe before that, I'm going to request all of us to please switch off our phones. Because if your phone is on silent, when it rings, it affects the recording of proceedings. So I would dearly request us to switch them off so that we can proceed properly. The department can now proceed.
Thank you, Chair. First, before I start, I would like to make two apologies. And the first one is for the Acting Director General, Mr. Konde, who could not be with us because of other commitment in the office. Then the second one has got to do with my presentation. We could not distribute the presentation in time because at the time when the invitation to come and make a presentation, I was basically out of office, and when I came in, I was told there is this meeting, and therefore I had to prepare there and then and make the presentation available. And for that, my apologies. Then when it comes, as I indicated, my name is Begum Asogo, and I'm Acting Deputy Director General for Vocational and Continuing Education and Training. And the presentation I'm going to make is going to focus largely on equity colleges, and I think I've got about two slides which deal with public adult learning centers, which is another function for which I'm responsible. Now, when we planned enrollment for 2011, we planned enrollment in relation to the Minister's Delivery Agreement, particularly Output 5.2, which has got to do with increasing access to programs which are meant to raise the base, and Output 3, which is an output on which we increase access to occupational training. And also, as we plan enrollment, we also take into account the recommendations made at the recent Equity Summit, which was held in September. Output 2 of the agreement deals with increasing student access to programs leading to intermediate and high-level learning. And the rationale for the output, as it has been argued before, is to ensure that once students exit, most of the students who come into colleges and who leave the schooling system do not have the right levels of numeracy and literacy and cognitive ability to enroll in occupational and other professional programs. And so then this output then deals with those programs which are meant to raise the base in order for the students who exit this program to be able to participate likely in higher education programs, be they professional or occupational. The output 5.3 of the delivery agreement has got to do likely here is the area in which, as we plan, we focus on producing likely artisans. And whether it is through apprenticeship or through learnership, but this output basically focuses on what do colleges plan to do with regard to the production of artisans. Now, the recommendations of the FET summit were made in the following areas. And it was agreed and recommended that the colleges have got to have a clear mission and purpose. And at which point it was agreed that the mission and purpose for colleges should be to offer both vocational and occupational programs which prepare students for employability and or progression into higher education. With regard to differentiation, and the issue there was there shouldn't be a differentiation in terms of big, small colleges or urban or rural colleges. The differentiation should be in terms of specialization, and that colleges should work on developing niche areas in which they are known as individually as institutions of excellence. In point three, the distribution of powers, functions, and responsibilities had to do, the recommendation there basically has, it has to do with governance. How should the governance of colleges proceed from now going forward, particularly with regard to who is the employer of the college staff? Should it be the state or should it continue? And the recommendation, as the minister indicated in his budget road speech, that the intention is to reabsorb back into the state for those employees and who were transferred into college employment. And the recommendations also basically has to do with that. Program offerings in FET colleges, as the members might recall, that at a particular point the department decided to phase out the so-called NATED program and introduce the NCV. And at this summit, the recommendation was, it's fine, keep the NCV, but the NCV provision is not flexible enough to cater for the needs of the people who are in employment, particularly the needs of the people who would like to come in and do a short three-month course and then go back to employment, as has been the case in the past. And also the reinstatement of the NATED program has got to do with the fact that for one to qualify as an artisan, at least you must have an N2. And therefore, notwithstanding the fact that the Old Manpower Act was repealed ages ago, but there are certain clauses of the Manpower Act which are still with us, which serve as a benchmark for the training of artisans. And therefore, if we want to intensify the training of artisans, and therefore we have to comply with the industry requirements, and those industry requirements come from the Old Manpower Training Act. Now, the other recommendation had to do with how do we plan for colleges. And the planning for colleges has got to be based on the qualification offered by individual colleges so that you don't plan on a blanket basis and so that you don't have a planning mechanism which assumes that all colleges are the same. And you have to plan in such a manner that you take into account the program qualification mix of that particular college and support that college accordingly. With regard to funding, it was agreed that the current funding framework is appropriate. However, the funding formula does not cater for other programs except the NCV, and therefore it has to be reviewed. I've already mentioned the issue of staff, that the intention and the recommendation is the reabsorption of staff. And at the same time, another recommendation was the department has got to have a strong monitoring, evaluation, and research function which is going to inform continuous improvement instead of relying on ad hoc research and ad hoc data. And finally, another recommendation also was the department has to ensure that changes which are put in place just don't happen by themselves. There has got to be a mechanism for change management at the department and at the institution to institutionalize the new changes that we are bringing about. Now, therefore, when we do operations planning and enrollment planning this year, we largely focus on five things. First one being, what is going to be the program offerings for colleges based on the minister's agreement and the recommendations of what our college is going to offer? We had to stabilize that because we don't want to have a situation where colleges are offering some programs and I would want to put it under the carpet. In other words, some programs are known, and in other instances, the college offers program but it doesn't report. And therefore, we had to institutionalize and establish a tradition of saying, these are the programs that are to be offered, and these are the programs that the state is going to provide subsidies for. And then we also had to, as we do every year, establish what it is going to cost a student in college fees and what it is going to cost the state per program in subsidies. And in the same manner, then we have to issue colleges with indicative budgets, and we had to look at staffing in order to determine the capacity of institutions to carry the load of the projected enrollment target. And then finally, the enrollment targets were determined. And the following slides deal with these aspects. Now, this is a list of programs that are to be offered in colleges depending on the college capacity, but the department does not prescribe the college council. The academic board and the management determine the local needs and decide these are the programs that the colleges are going to offer. First, as I've indicated, with regard to N1 to N3, those programs have been retained in engineering studies with a view to increasing the number of our students, as I've indicated. But with regard to N4 to N6, one of the outputs in the minister's agreement is the department has got to ensure that there are programs which meet the demands of those students who have matric but do not necessarily meet the university requirements. And therefore, your N4 to N6 are post-matric qualifications, even though not necessarily university qualifications. And then your NCV, National Certificate Vocational Level 4, Level 2 to 4. And there are also many other programs which are not part of the ministerial policy, but they are accredited as occupational programs by the CITES in order to serve certain economic sectors. And colleges are at liberty to offer these and use the funding windows in the NSF or the funding windows in the CITA grants. And therefore, with regard to the last set of programs, the state does not necessarily provide subsidies, and usually the training in this regard is driven by the sector education and training authorities using public education institutions, the FET colleges, as delivery sites. Now, as I've indicated, this is a list of programs. Earlier on, I referred to Report 191 programs, in other words, donated programs. This list indicates what it costs per year for a student to go through training.
and to what extent the state subsidizes the student per program. And then what is expected of the student to pay, and if the student cannot afford, and then what is the portion that the NSFAS bursary must cover. The last column, which is your student fees. And therefore, this is a list of program offerings, and these are fees, both in terms of total cost, subsidy, and student fees, which must be paid by the household, and or the students must be exempted using the NSFAS bursary. This is the continuation, basically, of the same slide. Now, using the 2010 MTEF allocations, what we do is to then project what enrollment is going to be based on the estimates. And then we therefore then indicate to colleges and provinces how much it is going to cost the province in the conditional grant. And so the figures as indicated in the first column indicates indicative budget, because the budget can only be confirmed once the Minister of Finance has made a determination as to what the final allocations are going to be. And therefore, the projected student enrollment at the moment indicates that we are, in terms of the current subsidy, we're expecting about 202,000 students, full-time equivalent. However, that number is going to increase because we're also expecting a more or less proportionately similar number, which derives from the target of the National Skills Development Strategy 3, which in this instance I couldn't put on the figures because with the targets, we do not have the targets for the sitters yet. But we know that the last part of this of the last column is going to cater for the students who come in to do the last set of programs, which I refer to as occupational programs. This is the just briefly, this is the number of college lecturers. And when you compare the number of students and the number of TC college lecturers, it does indicate that there is still room for expansion, because instead of the norm of one lecturer to 30 students, but the current utilization at the moment of that ratio is at average of one lecturer to 22. In other words, even if we were to expand the enrollment, there isn't going to be an immediate need for, at least for this year, for more lecturers in the system. The National Skills Development Strategy 3, sorry, there is a mistake right on the first line. It should be three. It's going to drive an additional number of about 60,000 students. And in this instance, we are targeting the production of artisans using the N1 to N3 route. And as I've already indicated, the delivery of level 1 to 4 sitter accredited occupational program to date, when we asked the colleges to give us a registration update, the number of these occupational programs stands at 4,176 of the 41 colleges that have reported. Now, when I indicated the college fees or program costs and college fees, I indicated that the last column deals with college fees which may be paid by those students who can afford, or the students can be exempted from paying fees using the NSFAS bursary. This year, about 318 million was available for this purpose, for exempting students. By the end of December, this amount had been dispersed by NSFAS to up to 317 million. And in 2010, we were able to cover 65,000 students who benefited from the bursary. For 2011, in line with both the President and the Minister's announcement, our projections are that this number is likely to increase 2.5 times to about 161,000 students being exempted from paying fees, those who are academically deserving and financially needy. And this is in pursuit of the ideal to progressively make education and training at undergraduate level free. Now, the department supports colleges just annually ever since the bursary started. And where a college is unable to, where we sense that the college is not able to process the claims, we go there and assist. And similarly, this year, we have visited several colleges already just to check whether their systems are ready, and they are ready to, first, to deal with the numbers, and secondly, to fast-track the claim so that the NSFAS process is not delayed. Now, we have over the years had a difficulty of students who cannot afford, and they are NSFAS beneficiaries, but each year the college expects the very same students to pay registration fees. And now, this year we have agreed that at least colleges should receive an advance of about 33% of the amount they received last year in order to ensure that those students who are NSFAS bursary beneficiaries are not requested to pay registration fees. And at the same time, we enable the college not to run on its knees because it has cash flow problems. However, when we go back to the college, we must be able to ensure that amount has followed the student. We must be able to trace it to an individual student, because the approach of the bursary is not necessarily to fund the college. The money goes to the college in order to exempt a particular student. And the 33% which is paid in advance is therefore going to be traced back to which student benefited from the 33%, and then the rest of the total allocation which will go to the colleges. The final allocations are sent to colleges immediately after the 15th of February, once we have received confirmation of enrollment from individual institutions. Now, to date, we are tracking enrollment patterns from colleges. The first column, with about 131,558 and 70,863, indicates what the enrollment was on the NATED program as well as on the NCV program. I haven't written anything with regard to N1, N2, N3, because last year the state did not subsidize this program because they were being phased out at the time. And it is only this year that these programs are reintroduced back into the system for the purpose that I have alluded to, which is a focus on the development of artisans. Now, when you ask for a report from a college, we need a college to indicate to us what was the enrollment last year at level 2, what is the projected enrollment this year at the same level, and what is the actual enrollment to date. Therefore, those, according to the report that we have received from the colleges, the total number of enrollment to date on the NCV is 33,000, which is not anywhere near the target set and also near the enrollment. And I also have reason to believe that the slow pace of enrollment may have to do with the fact that some colleges, in fact, colleges just reopened. And so they had to process the issue of results to determine who is progressing and who is not progressing. And on the N4 to N6 program, we today have an actual enrollment of 13,000, which is also far, in other words, there is still adequate space for more numbers to go to colleges. On the numbers which we are on N1 to N3, which we are subsidizing this year, we have 4,670 students who have actually enrolled, and on occupational programs, we have 4,176. And I am certain that the number on occupational programs is going to increase dramatically because the CETA college partnership is now that the National Skills Development Strategy 3 has been announced, and now the CETAs are now going to start engaging with colleges or vice versa in order to determine which college is going to offer which occupational programs for which sectors and what are the numbers going to be. So that during the course of the year, this number at 4176 is likely going to increase dramatically. And the report which I have on the screen is a report of 41 FET colleges, and the other 9 are still outstanding. In other words, the staff at the office is still pursuing enrollment. The plan is that colleges must report to us on a weekly basis. Report to us both on the numbers and the challenges they are experiencing with regard to enrollment. And these are the enrollment figures that we had as at 24th January 2011. Now, this is a slide which I talked about that it will also interest members of the committee that this function also falls within their ambit. In other words, the adult learning centers. These were the figures in 2010. However, the projections for the number was 264,999 across the country, and we also indicate how many educators were hired and how many of these centers are across the country. Now, this slide shows you the registration at these centers at the moment hasn't really started kicking off yet. However, on the basis of the available budgets as projected in the 2010 MTEF, the projection is 269 enrollment, and in the first slide, which I, in the second slide, which I indicated, that the ministry is expected to increase the numbers of learners in ABET level 1-4. And this is the area where we want to pursue that target, so that by 2014, the target is at least 300,000 or more. Now, of concern, though, is the fact that about 4 provinces indicate a decline in terms of budget allocation and therefore a decline in terms of enrollment numbers. And this is a concern, and I'm sure that there will have to be an engagement between ourselves and the province to say, in order to continue to meet the target set, and there's got to be an increase, a gradual increase in the budget, which should be consistent with the increase in enrollment figures. Chair, thank you very much.
Colleagues, would you want to engage with the portion of the presentation? I'm thinking that the perhaps better than waiting for the other portion of the presentation. Can I take this moment to allow members to then engage the contribution?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you to the department. Chairperson, the picture that we've just seen hides a lot of disturbing trends, both in adult education as well as in the public FET sector. As far as adult education is concerned, may I just point out that it's my understanding that most of the learners in adult education are what one could call part-time learners, which means that the figures do not really reflect, you know, the number of hours of study or the number of hours of tuition that those learners enjoy. It seems to me that there's not a full-time equivalent, if you may call it like that. A learner that takes half a course this year and half a course next year may be counted as two learners. Please correct me if I'm wrong. If not, can you just find, you know, how can we overcome that problem with the statistics? Then on the other hand, sir, may I just point out the dire situation with our FET colleges, and you've seen how the enrollments of our public FET colleges have dropped. And that is due to the department, and I want the department to comment on this, first phasing out or sending signals to the public FET colleges that certain of the programs will be phased out, and then the department is having a rethink, and then it's being brought back. Like the N1, 2, N3, and I think the figures show us, remember those are only engineering students, what the enormous demand for that course is out there. Yet the department saw it fit to phase that out. The same with the United 191 N4 to N6 figures. The department for the last 3 years, in terms of the government gazette, said this was going to phase out. And then in December of the preceding year, they would announce and say, no, these courses will be given another lease of life for another year. To their credit, last year, the announcement that these courses would still be available came earlier. I think that gazette appeared in September already. But then you will also see that the final formula for N4 to N6 differs vastly from the NCV, which means that colleges now tend not to offer alternatives to learners post-matric and rather concentrate on the pre-matric or the NCV levels 2 to 4. But then, so what it also hides and what we've not been informed of is the success rate of learners in the National Certificate Vocational. Yesterday I spoke to a reporter, I said to the reporter, I think, you know, in the first year the success rate was 16% who passed and to achieve the level 4 certificates. The report corrected me and said no, it was between 8% and 9% of learners. Now if we start calculating the cost per learner on achievements, on successful learners, and in a sense I believe there's a case to be made out to say teaching must be lead to something to count, then the cost of that those MCV programs per learner per annum would be 3, 4, 5, if we're still at 8%, 9%, it would be 10 times what we see there. So sir, there's a serious problem in our FET colleges. Our cost per capita for successful study, be it in the MCV or even in our EBIT centers, is enormously high. And I believe the department should give us an explanation today and tell us what are they going to do to bring down those costs. Because these are taxes that you need to spend in the best way possible. Thank you.
My colleague has already covered one of my questions, but I would like to know why was there the phasing out and then thereafter a phasing in of the one in 1, 2, 3. The other question is, I'm going to use the same words that the presenter used. He referred to differentiation regarding the type of courses. He used the word we should comply with the industry requirements. He asked, how do you plan? Does that entail curriculum development? How do you determine industry requirements? Is that the needs of society? And you also referred to we should determine local needs. I want to know exactly how do you plan these curriculums? How do you determine the needs? And how do you go about in finalizing these curriculums? Are they scientifically developed? Thank you.
Thanks, Chairperson. Thanks to the department for the presentation. Well, the first question has been covered, the issue of the concerns about the success rate. But the direct question is, what is our pass rate for 2010? What is the pass rate in the FET sector for 2010? The second question relates to the staff, reabsorption of the staff. And again, just one of the things that causes uncertainty in the sector. And I guess the department will agree with me that there was a lot of resistance, a lot of unhappiness over the decision to say staff will now go be employees of the colleges. And that it has caused a lot of unhappiness. And now, after that, when the morale becomes very low, I'm glad that it's been reversed. But the question is, are you also reabsorbing? Because I sit on your table, you say staff, you have personal, and then you have the college paid. Now, this reabsorption, can you assure us that you are going to reabsorb both categories into the system? The other question, Chairperson, relates to the public adult learning center. I'm looking at the table there. I'm looking at the educator-learner ratio and the disparities there. And it has very little to do with the fact that I'm from Limpopo, but I'll use Limpopo as an example. Look at the enrollment, the number of learners there. I'm trying to find that. Yes, the number of learners is 65,251. And then the number of educators. The number of educators, 2,400. Eastern Cape, with 36,000. KwaZulu Natal, with 46,000, 5,000. Now, I just want to understand, who determines this? Because obviously, and logically, the one who has more learners must have more educators. What is happening there? But also another question, success rate here. Because when the minister announced the metric results, we were given the assurance this is only for those learners who have presented 7 subjects and more. Now there is a huge number of the private candidates who are not accounted for. What is the success rate? What is the pass rate of this category of learners for 2010? I'll pause for now, Chairperson.
Thanks, Jefferson. My degree is not specifically, didn't come out in your presentation, but a concern that I have is students need experiential learning. Now, once they've gone through all their training, it seems that if they find it very difficult to get placements, to get that experiential learning. What is the department doing in terms to address this? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, when Honorable Dokobo has just asked this question of, you know, the imbalances of, educators and learners, of which it raises as a very serious concern that you must be able to at least to determine what criteria have they been used in terms of that. But the other issue relates to the weekly reports that you receive from colleges. I'm trying to check a consistent because I know that in the previous year were challenges of some of the universities who refused to submit reports, never reported in time. My question is that do you find that similar challenge within your colleges who don't report or, you know, who delay reports because you must also keep your statistics in order so that you avoid also those challenges. Last question. It really gives me a very serious challenge, when I see this decline in terms of your enrollment in the colleges. You know, I look at Mpumalanga, it really gives me very serious concern. But then I'm trying to look at maybe strategies you will try and imply in order to increase your number. What extra assistance that you think maybe the committee can assist you with in order to mitigate with these challenges? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the presenter. Thank you, sir. I have been covered on a lot of concerns, and I'm also quite mindful of the fact that the presentation itself is around enrollment and registration planning. So I'm worried about that. Planning for when? Now? I don't get that. What are we planning for? Are we planning for this year? Or are we planning for next year? I understand what you're saying, but if this planning, I don't know if you are presenting something that you had planned for or you are planning to go for, so I'm not sure about that one. But also the issue for me, and thank you for the projections and the numbers that you've given us. However, I think as Parliament, you would also be very interested in the qualitative or the narrative of it. Because if you talk about enrollments and you talk about all the numbers and the projections that you have, we would necessarily be very interested in processes. We would be interested in people. We would be interested in the quality of your lecturers. We would be interested in the systems that you're talking about. Somewhere in the slides, you are talking about systems have been put in place in order to support the FET colleges. What systems are we talking about? And how are they going to achieve that which you want to achieve? I also like, if I may, I like it when departments or organs of the state to present to us the context in which you are making the presentation. In other words, this registration and the planning, it is in which context? When it's happening, what problem are you solving? What does it look like? What is the EnviroScan? What is it? What are we trying to fix? So I understand we need all these things in order to achieve what objective. I know that it is there, but I'm just saying it always is nice if you put it forward so that we can appreciate the context in which this planning is taking place. The big question is, what problem are we solving? And that for me is important. The FET recommendations, as in last year, for example, I get them on the slide, but the issue is, have we done anything about them, save the fact that they are recommendations? Are we talking to what now we are trying to do as per the recommendations,
or these are just recommendations as they came through last year? I think I will pause there, Chairman. Thank you.
Chairperson, thank you very much, and thank you for the presentation. But firstly, I would like to say, from what we have got from this presentation, specifically on the slide on enrollment progress as far as now, I think when we see the progress on the enrollment for this year, it still shows that we still have a problem with the FET colleges. For the fact that when you look at those numbers, even the presenter said it's still a lot of space where we're still expecting a lot of learners to get in. To me, it proves that we haven't done much on the FETs to build in confidence, that people have confidence on the FETs. We haven't done much on the fact that FETs should be colleges of choice, not that people have to go first time the universities, then when they are rejected, they come back to the FET colleges. Because for sure, when you come back around March, these spaces will be filled up because most of the learners who have not started there to go through the universities, then they would opt to come to the FET colleges. I think that indicates that we still have a lot to do around how to make sure that people see the FET colleges as one space of where they can come as per choice, not that they are rejected from the universities. Secondly, when you look at the end from the N4 to N6, where it's post-metric, as it has been said, as you know, I'd like to know really the level of articulation after a person has done that N6. How easy is it for that learner to articulate, to continue to the university level? Because we all know that, yeah, articulation is needed. We need our learners to continue. The equivalent part of it as to what is happening around the qualification that such a learner can get when he has completed that. And lastly, I think I was pleased with the offering of the M and as per the needs of the industry. And that shows that our colleges are going back to have that college industry partnership. And I just wonder if the department really is there anything to make sure as it is in the plan, as to say that partnership is being built, because even when we look at the issue of funding, once we build the partnership of the industry and the colleges, for sure our colleges will be sustained and their program is running very, very well. So I would like to commend the bringing back of such causes, because they are going to make our colleges sustainable for quite some time. Lastly, there is this thing of NFRs, the 33%, how was it put, but there is this 33% from the NFRs that has been requested to be reimbursed, to be given in advance. I'll be happy if I get the progress of it, because what has been said here, it has just been requested, and what is the response of NFRs, because we must know how is NFRs responding, and so that for us to see whether the learners will be affected or not. Let us not be satisfied as the request, but fortunately even NFRs is around so that you can see how far are they coming towards the request that you have just made. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks. Quickly, I think there's another dimension on the basis of which I still want to ask one question asked before. The NCV initially had high failure rates, and there were challenges in that regard. Just to satisfy ourselves whether we're turning the corner, that will be clarified by the success rate or pass rate that will be indicated as to what it is, and if there are any dropouts in that particular regard, we may want to know about that. Can we be assured by the department that the NSFAS funding that is there can be able to take care or cater for all deserving students. Are we able to say with the numbers that are there, we know the metric pass rates by now, probably we'll know we can have this particular projection. In the event, most of those are deserving students, because we'll know some of them are actually coming even from the quintile one or no fee schools. All of a sudden, to be expected to pay 18,000 or some amount in that regard, it may not necessarily be a reasonable thinking. Now, can we be assured that that could be taken care of? The funding formula for colleges, after the introduction of these new programs, and they were no longer funded based on the end costs, and most of those did not shift or did not transform to be offering the new programs, and they relied more on student fees. And with that funding having been cut, it meant they were operating at a deficit. Are you addressing that backlog, or all you're looking for is the current year going forward? Because most of them were on the verge of actually collapsing because they could not have the funding that was required for them to run. The other question, on this particular 41 colleges we're referring to, or that which the department deals with, are we also including overall in terms of how you're coordinating the whole thing? Are you also including those that at some point were being run or managed by sister departments like agricultural colleges, nursing colleges? I'm just saying, are we taking care of everybody, or they are still being run by the relevant departments and not necessarily yourself? The question that I have got now, as I want to conclude, Chair, is one on schools of skills, which at times do not necessarily get attention at this level. They are supposed to be attended to by basic education. But then, at some point, they are not even being certificated. Nobody seems to be taking care of them. To what extent is ourselves, or are ourselves able to attend to that, give attention to those, or they will just be left on their own in the cold like that? The last one, Chair, program offerings by FET. There are some of the schemes for artisans that has nothing to do with the environment on which they operate or around which they operate. They are just based. They can be offered anywhere in the country. And those, to me, were supposed to be minimum programs that the department should be able, shall I say, impose. I know it may not have to be a good way necessarily to impose onto them. But those could be something that should be expected from every college, because you need those regardless of where that particular FET college or institution is operating from. So I would want to get that. Yeah, so let me... the last part. The 41 colleges that reported, apparently there are those that did not report about 10 or more than that. Why? What are their challenges? Haven't they opened yet? Or what is the problem? Or they just did not report on the basis of their own challenges in terms of their system or capacity challenges?
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I have three very short questions. It might be one explained in three different ways. Are we moving as a country towards an era where every artisan trained out there will have a job waiting for them? Is there anything informing the intake in FETs that we train so many assistants, because we know there is a need. Because clearly, if we prepare for learners to go and work after they've been trained, we should definitely guide them, channel them that you need to train for this part, because we have got so many educators short in the country, so many nurses, such that we know exactly what's short. And until we move towards that end, I'm wondering if universities are just business as usual, or how we're training people because there's a need, or we foresee that so that if you don't get trained, and after training, it's like you cannot work. Your skill is not necessary somewhere. Is there anything informing the colleges? Is that plan? Because if we move towards that, perhaps we'll be doing something better. And are we ever going to have a paradigm shift versus varsities and FHs? Because each time we debate, you listen, it's like I was listening, unless if I got it wrongly, that after doing your N6, we still talk of your entrance into varsity to do what? You do N3, 4, 5, and 6, you get a skill which is very necessary out there. But it's like we still want to make sure that after N6, you need to be able to go to varsity with your skill, the skill that is necessary to be used. Are we moving towards a paradigm shift, not only of the world out there, but for everybody, including us here? Are we moving towards understanding that the attitudes produce a skill, and the skills are that, those are the things that we need, then we can go for our degree, for, it's like you are putting a Chevy on the cat, or on whatever. That's what how I understand it. Can we move towards that era? Because we will come here and talk of N1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, then you end up going to varsity. Hope to do what? Thank you.
I think as a presenter, I've been listening carefully to questions. Some of them could be very, rhetorical advancement as to how you could transform further this field. Some are pointed and have a creative answer on those who feel it has far too little of time was going to bring them to more important.
I'll try to be brief. Can I just ask that with the indulgence of the committee and chair, that we be allowed to come back and present a detailed report on system performance? Because I think in my preparation for this meeting, I have not done the thorough analysis which is going to indicate to this committee whether the system is turning the corner or is not. And therefore, I would appreciate a situation where I just have a focused, detailed presentation on where the system is headed. Is there any improvement? So that I don't deal with the issue, with that issue now.
There's no problem. Our idea is that you're giving us a preliminary report in terms of the issues that were raised. And there will be a detailed and comprehensive report, inclusive of the 9 FETs that haven't reported. Which report will be now a report that is final in terms of the enrollment. Now we are assessing current ongoing processes, and the committee will want to know at a later stage the totality of our progress in this area. And during that moment, then you incorporate the report on the functionality of the systems and so on. And just couple to what colleagues had said, I think in the FET Summit recommendations or resolutions, you spoke to the issue of a placement program. How far is the department regarding that. Do you have systems in place now to be able to audit those that exit the system successfully, who then have to be placed to various or in the labor market or not?
Let me start with the question on the number of reflected on the adult education and training slide. And those are that is headcount. That is headcount because, you know, adult learners, they come in and do one or two learning areas. They don't go for a sitting of all of them at the same time. And so that is not necessarily full-time equivalent, and therefore it will be headcount. With regard to bringing down the cost of the programs, subsequent to the FET summit, what we have worked on is one. What is included in the program cost are the input elements such as the infrastructure, the wear and tear of workshops, the payment for lecturers, the operational cost. Now, that is just one of and I think student books and the gear which they wear when they go to the workshop. And so that our efforts have got to go rather to getting value for money. In other words, the lecturers must teach and the quality of the throughput rate must increase so that then the state is able to appreciate the fact that while we are investing so much money and we are getting value for it at the end of it, so that it makes triple colleges to reduce the cost, because reducing the cost doesn't necessarily mean that the material that they use to train the students, the cost thereof is going to reduce. However, we have to increase the throughput rate, and that is the focus, particularly with regard to training capacity of lecturers. Why phase in and phase out? It will suffice to say that I think the mistake has been recognized. First, that the MCV can't accept every type of a learner. The offering is completely inflexible. It's for learners who are not employed, who can afford to sit in the class for the whole week, for the whole year. But there is another cohort of learners who would like to come in and out as the industry releases them on block releases, and the MCV can, and that realization has been made, and hence it has been corrected. And as I also indicated then, that by law, at the moment, you are required to have the M2 as a basis for qualifying as an artisan. The reabsorption of both the division there is for convenience and auditing purpose, because when we transfer, for instance, the conditional grant to colleges, we have to make a determination which money, how much is retained by the province and how much must be transferred to colleges to pay those who are in the college payroll. But when it comes to the reabsorption, and I think, Chair, this is going to be a subject of discussion, which I cannot preempt now, whether everyone will be reabsorbed or some and not all will be reabsorbed. It will be a discussion between the ministry, the department, and the labor movement, and then, therefore, I think a consensus will be reached there as to how, what format the absorption takes. With regard to adult education and training, who determines the staffing complement? The provinces do. We don't. each province determines how many staff members would it needs in order to support their learners in the adult learning centers. And therefore, there is no national norm which says if you have so many, therefore you should, if you have so many learners, therefore you should have so many staff members. And the norm which was to be implemented at the beginning of 2011 was withdrawn, because when we approached provinces to determine the capacity of public adult learning centers to implement the norm, the capacity wasn't there. And therefore we withdrew the norm, and also that the norm was determined at a time when adult education and training was not in the new higher education environment. And therefore, in terms of the policy trust and the adult education and training centers as they stand now, they may metamorphose into something completely different with regard to the types of programs offered in them and the types of teachers who are teaching in there, and so on and so forth. And therefore, in the context of the policy change and the incapacity of adult learning centers to administer the norm, we suspended and we allowed provinces to continue in the manner they have been supporting adult learning centers, such that while the budget for colleges is in the conditional grant, the budget for adult learning centers is not in the conditional grant, is still run directly by provinces. The experiential learning, here the decision which has been reached by the department is in consultation with our section on exam and the colleges, we have to get hold of all the graduates, the people who have already passed colleges, with a view of saying to the sitters, please assist in finding placement for the student in order for them to be able to meet the requirement for the 18-month experiential learning, particularly on the N6 program, so that they can then get their diploma and then get completely qualified and get ready for work. And that correspondence is going out to every institution in the country, and our database has got the numbers, but we want to know who exactly in terms of name, because when it comes to contacting them, we must be contacting people, not just the numbers. Delays, the two members raised questions with regard to delays. I don't think there is resistance in terms of colleges supplying data. It's only that the colleges respond at different paces, and we kept sending requests for data, not necessarily enrollment data, just about any, they respond in completely different ways and in terms of pace, and you have to go to the same college once, twice, thrice, trying to get the data. And talking to the principal, we need the data on this, and the principal is going to talk to the person responsible for the data, and then it takes, for some colleges, it takes ages. But it talks to a fundamental problem. Colleges are not at the same level in terms of IT infrastructure and management information systems. And therefore, those colleges that have the better levels of management information systems are able to give you the data at a click. And a part of our project for which we are being supported by the Dutch government is to ensure that first there is connectivity in colleges, and secondly also to make sure that there is uniform management information systems in FET colleges. I actually don't think
I think we are going to have far much more enrollment in colleges this year. However, the issue which was raised by one of the members is the issue we are trying to work on, and I think the minister throughout the greater part of 2010 and the department, we are trying to change the minds of the people of South Africa that if you go to a college, you just get the skills that you need. However, what is happening at the moment, as one of the members indicated, they start queuing at universities, and then once they have been turned down there, and then they come back to FET colleges. And I think this is going to require a consistent, concerted effort over a longer period of time. Also, the economy that we run, as soon as the economy is able to recognize the skill acquired at an FET college instead of a degree, then we are also going to be able to change the mindset. Because at the moment, if the demand is for degrees and professions, then the move is first, actually, first get a degree, and if you can't, rather than come back to a college. And this is going to be a long-term struggle for the department to elevate the status of the FET colleges. Partnership building, basically, one of the recommendations in the FET summit was that of building partnership with industry, and that is in place. And out of the FET summit, we developed what is called work streams to support colleges. One of the work streams is working on, is dedicated to support colleges on an individual basis to establish relationships with the industry or employers around the college where the college is. And that is done through the work stream and the work which is done by the Sector Education and Training Authority. Articulation, yes and no. You see, universities choose what they will recognize as your as part of the N6, even if you have an N6, but they will decide that they will recognize this cause and that cause so that you don't, but they will not recognize the N6. In other words, the major programs do not articulate directly into the university program. However, the review which is recommended in the National Skills Development Strategy 3 is meant to review the NATED programs in such a manner that they serve as a basis both for going into employment and articulating into the university sector, because it's an area of managing human aspirations. If I want to go to work now, it's fine, but it doesn't mean that I will not want to go to improve my studies in future. If I want to, the qualification that I have must enable me to do both at different times. The funding of the deficits, the minister has committed to deal with the deficit in FET colleges by ensuring that he finds resources to deal with the deficit. Because some of the reasons for dealing with the deficit, as it has been pointed out, arose from the implementation of the funding norms without providing the bridge funding. If you have been using a staff establishment formula and you immediately shift to a program funding formula, then these things don't match. Therefore, there had to be bridge funding which elevates colleges up to a particular point, and that didn't happen. And that is what we are working on now. The agricultural colleges and nursing colleges are currently being run by line function departments.
agriculture looks after colleges of agriculture, and health looks after colleges of nursing at the moment, and whether that is likely going to change, and we will look at the situation as it unfolds. Again, between our engagement and between ourselves and the Department of Agriculture and the Department of and the Department of Health. With regard to NSFAS response, I am so happy they are here. They will be able to respond how they are dealing with the DG's request for them to advance institution at the level of 33%. Finally, I just want to point out in one of my slides, I indicated that there should be something that defines a college across the board, and that should be vocational or occupational programs. That has been agreed, and we are implementing that now. And the recommendations as put there, we are implementing just about all of them except the one which deals with legislative amendment. The one which deals with the distribution of responsibility that requires a legislative amendment, and therefore the parliamentary process must unfold, and the reabsorption of staff that will also wait for the parliamentary process to unfold, and then it can be concluded. The curriculum in equity colleges. We are offering a program called Safety in Society, which prepares students for employment in the South African police force. We didn't do the curriculum. The SAPS worked with us to say, they have training units across the country. They support colleges. In other words, when we say the curriculum is industry related, we engage with that sector in the development of the curriculum. And for instance, one of our NCV programs, the construction program, the construction industry made a determination that no, it has got weaknesses and it has already been reviewed, because the industry wasn't happy with the packaging and the content. And therefore, at no point do we just sit in 1, 2, 3 Schoolman Street and concoct the curriculum and send to colleges. We engage with industry, we engage with employers for both occupational programs as well as vocational programs. Thanks, Chair.
I'd like to believe that sufficiently on our questions have been covered, and in the event of some questions not been well answered, we still have an opportunity in our subsequent meeting when we'll be getting a full report to thoroughly engage with the presentation. Can I now call upon another colleague to give us a further presentation? Funds will come, they'll clarify at our time.
Chairperson and portfolio committee members. This presentation has three components to it. The first component is dealing with enrollment planning at our universities. The second is to provide you with a registration update. And the third is to discuss the review of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme and the recommendations of the Ministerial Committee and the progress and processes thereof. So I'm going to begin with talking about enrollment planning. just to place this in context, enrollment planning is done with the future in mind. It's done in 3-year cycles to be aligned with the NTEF 3-year cycles of funding so that we have some certainty as to what kinds of funds will be available. The enrollment planning is informed by the PME targets set by our minister, but also by the needs of the country, by information that we have from the Planning Commission, from the HRDSA, as well as from our NSDS 3, and taking into account the context of our 23 universities. I'd like to just signal, Chairperson, that last year I did a comprehensive presentation, so I didn't include it in this presentation, which set out the principles on which enrollment planning is undertaken. And we can always do that if required or provide you with that information. Now, over the last year, in 2010, we undertook visits to all 23 of our institutions to do an assessment of their growth plans for 2011 onwards, and taking into account the minister's priority areas as well as some of the infrastructure demands or capacity constraints that they would be experiencing. So there is quite a comprehensive planning exercise which the universities undertake and feed into us so that it becomes an iterative process, so that it's not just one way. Part of the planning in this exercise and the visits to the institutions is to ascertain what is the capacity of our institutions, what is it currently, and what will we be growing it into. Over the last 5 years, we have invested more than $5 billion in infrastructure development, which means that we have increased capacity, especially in areas of teacher education, of engineering, in the life sciences and science programs, as well as a project dealing with expansion of healthcare professionals. So this exercise that we completed last year with visits to all 23 institutions was a very fine-grained analysis of the portfolio of each institution, their program offerings, their capacity in terms of infrastructure as well as staff, and their growth potential. In February this year, because universities need to audit their final statistics, etc., in February this year, we will be compiling a final enrollment plan for the next 3 years based on completed enrollment plans that will be submitted to the department by February this year. By the time we analyze it, we estimate about 3 weeks. And the minister will then sign off on these approved enrollment targets. Now, the slide in front of you indicates what our level of growth was in 2005, which was 737,600 students. What was targeted for 2010 was an estimated 816. What we are expecting, based on the trends from 2009 and 10, where the improvement in the NCS results created the pressure on the universities, and the universities enrolled more than they had previously indicated, we are expecting the growth to be 842,704, but we will only be able to assess these figures by about June this year with provisional figures from our universities, but we are monitoring the situation on a weekly basis with our universities. But that's in terms of actual registrations. If you, the university semesters are organized in such a way that first-time entering students' enrollments take place right until the end of February. In some cases, there is an extension provided to students, and registrations are finalized in March. And in universities like UNISA, there is also registration at the midterm, which is in July. So there's dual registration. Some of our UOTs and comprehensives are also expecting an intake in July. So our figures are usually only provisional in June, but final figures will be available towards the end of the year. In terms of our first-time entering students, now, as you know, from the NCS results, there was an improvement from 60.6% to 67.8% of those qualifying for entry into universities. In terms of our national first-time entering students, we are envisaging that at least approximately 20% of our enrollments will be the first-time entering students, and the balance will be made up of second years, third years, as well as our postgraduate students. When we use the term first-time entering, we're talking about the intake either directly from the NCS or those who have worked for a year or taken a gap year and then entered our university. 2009 was the first year for the NSC intake. A total of 164,528 new students were enrolled. This was a national growth of 10% that was unexpectedly experienced. In 2010, the first time entering enrollments cannot be verified as yet, but we are monitoring the registration process excuse me, at our universities on a weekly basis. However, the expected enrollment for 2010 in relation to 2009 was an expectancy of 144,000, which was 13.4% less than the previous year. One of the areas of concern that we have already engaged our universities on was the fact that because of the increase in number of students that were accepted in first year in 2009, there were a range of areas that we as the department have taken up or as universities, the universities have taken up. So, for example, one of the issues was the articulation between the NSC Physical Science and Maths and the Physical Science and Maths that are offered at universities and whether the gap could be managed by foundation programs or academic support programs to ensure that we do not have blockage in the system by students not being able to pass the first year. We have had substantial discussion with the universities, with the Department of Basic Education, with Umalusi, and we are quite pleased to say that we haven't solved the problem, but we have actually identified the areas that need work, and they are being worked on as we speak. So in terms of the first time entering undergraduates, this year we have been, as a department, consciously sending out a message that that universities are not the only option for students emerging with an NSC. We have been directing students to FET colleges, to skills programs, to internships. All these fall within our department, and we have one call center. We have a career guidance website, which we didn't have at that stage, and we are quite focused in our attempts to provide as much support to the students as is required so that students can find a place elsewhere rather than just be focused on only entrance to universities. We've been working quite closely through the call center, through queries that come to the department to redirect students depending on which province they're from, or their preference in terms of where they would like to go or what they would like to study, to provide far more detailed counseling and career guidance than was previously available. Last year when we reported, this committee asked this question, and we hadn't put in place appropriate measures at that stage. And I'm pleased to report that both the career guidance website, which is run in conjunction with the South African Qualifications Authority, as well as our call centre and our branch, are working quite closely to provide as much support to our students as possible. In terms of the national participation rate, the required number in higher education for 2013 is approximately 1 million if we are to assume that 20% of our population of 18 to 24-year-olds should be in universities. Of course, as you will know, that based on the base from which you calculate the percentage, the figure can be a shifting figure. It is possible that we will be at 940, but I would like to signal to this committee that we are at the moment working on two new institutions, universities for Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, and these statistics may change based on developments thereof. In fact, we have a meeting tomorrow with both the institutes as well as the task teams that the minister has appointed. So we are expecting that our current enrollment and participation rate will signal a significant change, which we cannot project right now, but which we will be projecting based on our population analysis as well as the trends in terms of educational requirements for each of the provinces, noting as well that students from those provinces are not the only clientele for those universities, and that universities are a national competence, and therefore students from across the country would be visiting and applying for admission to those institutions. The undergraduate size and shape. Our targeted growth was to ensure that we have, based on the NSC, based on the labor market analysis, that there was a need for both lower-end skills as well as the high-end skills in terms of postgraduate students. But we also discerned that the diploma type of offerings, given the kind of curriculum which is in a diploma, was more suitable, and it was given that we have UOTs as well as comprehensives, we were projecting an increase in growth in the numbers of students who would be registered for diplomas and certificates. It also gives us a quick turnaround, and it also provides the universities with the freeing up of space quite quickly. Institutions are proposing a higher growth for degree enrollments, 3% in relation to diplomas, which is 1.9%. The statistics will show you that by 2010, we are expecting that in terms of undergraduate degrees, out of a total of approximately 800,000 students in higher education, that at least 370,000 plus minus will be in undergraduate degrees. We are also projecting that 244,000 will be in diplomas. And you will see that there is a dip envisaged for 2010, and this may alter depending on enrollment patterns at our universities, which we will be able to report on to later on in the year once the universities finalize their enrollment. But at the moment, this is what the growth is projected for. In terms of postgraduate size and shape, last year we presented to this committee the focus on the minister's PME targets, which are to increase the numbers of students in honors programs, master's programs, PhD programs, as well as the postdocs. Our priority is not just to focus on enrollment. That is, we have a dual commitment. One is for access to our universities, but also quite a strong focus on improving success. So in the enrollment planning exercises that we worked through with all 23 of our universities, there was a detailed engagement with each university relating to their success rates, their throughput rates. We also had a detailed engagement with them and have asked them to report back to us that based on our figures, which would be the 2009 figures per institution, what measures would they be putting in place in order to either improve their success rates or throughput rates, and what could we as a department do to support them in these initiatives. So there has been a detailed iteration with each institution, which is quite a fine-grained analysis. In some cases, we have asked institutions to focus on particular programs where there appears to be particular problems in throughput rates or success rates in particular courses, and to do a far more close, fine-grained analysis in order to improve on the success rates. Our targeted postgraduate shape of 2010 is 17%, and it is expected to be 16% by 2013. The 16% doesn't mean a decline, because your base is growing in terms of numbers. So the 16% is not a decline, as you will see, but is an increase in numbers. Our priority is to increase output in postgraduate programs, and to this extent we've been working quite closely with the Department of Science and Technology to ensure that we are in proper dialogue and discussion in areas that we are required to work quite closely on, especially in relation to postgraduate funding that is available and the kinds of programs and incentivization that we need to provide for support, especially in terms of supervision for the postgraduate students. As you will see, our total PhDs, we are expecting to increase by 2013 to approximately 12,500. We're expecting to increase the masters from where we were, of 44,000 in 2005, to 52,000, almost 53,000 by 2013. And the same applies to the NZNDs, as well as the postgraduate, total postgraduate enrollment. A priority field for this country has been identified. Way back in 2002, which seems a long time away ago, but it was indicated that the target that we were aiming for then was that in terms of our enrollment, of our total enrollment, at least 30% of our enrollments would be in the field of STEM. I'm pleased to say that we are almost there. In fact, we're about 29 point plus minus percent of the total enrollment. We have new PME targets which place a focus on the life sciences, engineering, animal health, human health, and these, as well as physical sciences. And we are asking our institutions, our PME targets were given to us last year. Through the enrollment planning process, we have discussed with each institution what their existing capacity is per area of growth targeted. And once we get in the data in February, we will be able to report on
what is our projection. So we are expecting the current shape as presented right now to be slightly different, because we have to take into account completion of infrastructure projects, which means that if an infrastructure project was funded in the year 2008, the completion date would be 2010, and the enrollment increase would be perhaps possibly 2011, but we are awaiting this data from our universities. What we do have at our disposal is that when we funded, we also worked on estimated increase in places at our universities. We've had a government investment of 1.852 million for 2006-2012, which was 56.7% of the total government allocation to achieve a targeted growth of 2.7 in headcount growth. And we are urging all our institutions to prioritize the fields of that have been identified for them in each institution. Teacher education, as you know, we have a target in terms of our PNE, which is that we need to have 12,000 graduates in initial teacher education by 2014. Currently, we are trying to increase our enrollment, because the enrollments are what needs to translate into graduates. If you're talking about initial teacher education, it takes 4 years in terms of completing on time for a student to complete a BS degree if they're studying full-time. If they're doing it part-time, it could take 6 to 8 years, depending on the student's ability to take on courses. If you're doing a PGCE, which is where we are focusing our attention on, that is a one-year program after your initial degree. And we are focusing our energies on increasing the enrollments significantly. You will see that between 2005 and 2013, and I've just put in 2008, that we are quite significantly increasing the numbers of enrollments. Working on the assumption, working backwards from the target of 12,000 graduates, what is it that we need in terms of actual enrollment in order to achieve these targets? Current investment through infrastructure and efficiency funding for the field of teacher education is 14.5% for the 2006 to 2012 period, which means that we have added additional capacity in terms of infrastructure at our institutions in order to grow these targets. My next slides are on the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Chairperson, we had the request was to provide an update on enrollment planning. Also to provide an update on registration. As you know, that currently we are registering students at our universities and our equity colleges. The department has a joint internal task team that is monitoring registration on a weekly basis. It's actually monitoring on a daily basis. The committee just meets once a week. This is a committee comprising of senior officials in the department from the FET sector, from the skills sector, from the call center, from the minister's office, from communications, as well as from the university's branch. What we do is we receive daily reports from our universities and our colleges, and we are aware of most of the areas of concern or problems and are acting not reactively, but as proactively as possible. We have at least 8 to 9 institutions that we have identified from past historical experience, as well as an understanding of the issues at those particular institutions, what particular problems there could be. In most cases, the issues are related to financial aid or academic exclusions or registration pressures in terms of what we call the walk-ins at universities. The walk-ins are those who decide in 2011 that they now are going to go to university and who have not applied for admission in 2010. You will all have noticed the television footage and coverage of the University of Johannesburg. The department was monitoring the situation on a daily basis, and they were one of the universities that had a large number of walk-ins. We have a similar situation at Walter Sisulu, as well as the University of Fort Hare, and Zululand is still to be registering next week. And we have weekly updates as to what is happening, what are the numbers of students, what is the capacity, what are the issues. Some of the key issues that I would like to just flag are financial aid and secondly, student accommodation. As you know, the minister in his budget speech last year established a task team on reviewing the accommodation situation. The task team's report will be presented to the minister in March, and it is envisaged that once this report has been studied internally by the department, some recommendations will then translate into actions to increase the student accommodation problem. It's quite heartening to note, Chairperson, that we're not alone in the world with the student accommodation issue. It is an issue which is facing most countries, both developed as well as developing countries, and internationally we have been looking at what practices are undertaken in order to address the issue of student accommodation. And this arises from our widening of access and mobility of students. The pressures on particular centres like urban centres where there are more than three or four universities and colleges, the pressures in those particular cities or provinces is far more heightened. So, for example, Gauteng, Cape Town, the Cape Province, there are particular problems associated with accommodation, taking into account the numbers of colleges and universities. The task team has been asked to look at accommodation issues for universities, which we have added to their work by saying it's not just about universities, but it's about all student accommodation, actually, even those for FET colleges. And that report will be available in March. The second issue of student financial aid, I will be addressing in my next slide. And I don't know whether you'd like me to stop and take questions maybe related to registration and enrollment before I proceed to the request.
Is it fine that you can proceed to ask those slides and take them? Go ahead. No, you can proceed.
In 2010, the minister received the report from the ministerial committee of appointed by him to look into the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. There were a series of recommendations that were made, and of course these have had to be studied quite closely by the department. A cabinet memo was developed and a report prepared in August last year. That was taken to cabinet, that was approved. Subsequent to that, a great deal of work was undertaken in terms of working out the quantum of funds that would be required in order to cover need. Now, one of the key recommendations of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme recommendations was that it was quite clear that demand
was far greater than what we could supply. There were also very fine-grained recommendations that I would like the opportunity at a later stage, once we are full into implementation of some of the recommendations, to present as to what are the actual problems linked to the affordability dimension as well as success at universities, and whether there is any validity in the recommendations that deficit in financial aid provided to students creates a success problem for the student. In other words, if a student does not have sufficient financial aid or bursaries to continue their studies and to purchase the books required or the lab equipment required, then it could affect the performance of the student. In this regard, there were several recommendations that were made in terms of academic development programs, academic support programs, as well as looking at how could the National Student Financial Aid Scheme cover full cost of funding for students, as well as make provision for living expenses for the students. Now, in terms of the recommendations, I've got another slide which deals with the recommendations, but the key recommendation, and actually all the focus really is around the supply-demand and the shortfall in funds that are available to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme. Now, in previous years, we've reported unspent funds at the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, and we are pleased to say that we have addressed that problem quite firmly, and the CEO will bear me out and the chairperson of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, that this has been monitored almost on a monthly basis, so that funds are shifted constantly to where there is need. So this has been worked on quite so that we do not come back to the committee and say that we know that there is a need out there, but we still have funds that have not been allocated to students. So that matter has been, I think, dealt with, that we no longer have the question of unspent funds. In terms of our baseline allocations, these are the figures that we have for higher education. It is quite clear in terms of the pattern that the amounts do not match the needs. Taking into account some of the recommendations of the Ministerial Review Committee, we put in an additional bid for funds to the Treasury in the bid process through Treasury. We secured additional funding for both my colleague to the left as well as the universities. So both further education and higher education were awarded over and above the baseline, an additional allocation. This additional funding of 1.6 billion, 2 billion, and 2.1 billion received from National Treasury for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme was only communicated to us in December last year. So we worked through December and most of Jan, almost on a daily basis, on how these funds are going to be utilized and how are we going to ensure that these funds will be committed to the required stakeholders, both in universities as well as APT colleges. The state president had announced that one of the areas that would be tackled would be the extension of full cost funding to FET college students in all programs, including the N1 and N2. And that is in line with the commitment to increasing the numbers of enrollments in those particular programs, as well as based on the identified need. For universities, what we had indicated that there was a way of addressing the issue of providing funding to students, as well as incentivizing the funding in order to produce graduates, so that we would achieve I don't want to talk about killing birds, but we would be sort of like two birds with one stone. We would actually be funding final year students who are NSFAS, who qualify for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, but we would also be ensuring that should they be academically successful, that loan for the final year will be converted into 100% bursary. Now, this is quite a significant initiative that has required, given that we were only allocated these additional funds in December 2010, we've worked quite closely with the National Student Financial Aid Scheme in a kind of a joint working group with the board membership, as well as the organization, as well as members of the department, to ensure that we work through the allocation of this to our institutions quite carefully. We've also written to ensure that everyone in this activity plays their role. We've written to universities indicating that these funds have been allocated. This is the thinking behind it. It is about efficient utilization of state resources. Because if you remember the funding formula for universities, it is premised on an amount for enrolled students and an amount awarded to the university for graduating a student. So if you think about efficient utilization of this, if we work on the premise that affordability is a inhibiting factor for our students in completing, if we provide full cost of funding in the final year, and we also request our institutions to ensure that teaching and learning is focused on and that there is a conscious effort to improve graduation, especially at the final year level, then we are working on the assumption that if all parties work together, that we should be able to report significant progress by 2012. We are quite hopeful. We've also asked every university to provide us with a report on what they will be doing in order to manage the fact that there is additional funding now for the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, and this final year program is to take place, but for it to be a successful program, for them to report on what changes, because it can't be business as usual, what changes are taking place in order to ensure that we actually achieve graduation rates. We've agreed at the NSFAS board meeting that in order for this program to be successful, this will be administered by NSFAS as a centrally administered conduit fund and will be ring-fenced. In other words, universities will send us a list of all the students who are in final year who qualify for financial aid, and the funds will be allocated per student from NSFAS. In the normal scenario, you will know that institutions receive a global amount for that they can utilize for NSFAS. But for the final year scheme, because it's additional funding from Treasury, and we would like to be able to report on it quite separately, we've centralized this application. This is being monitored very closely by the board, and our chairperson will no doubt maybe report briefly on some of the steps that have been taken by the board in order to ensure that there are no flaws in the implementation. The model will be phased in over the next few years to include students in earlier years of study, based on the assumption that we will get additional funds over and above this allocation. So we will be putting in an application to Treasury for additional funds over and above the baseline allocation, the additional allocation, but we will be putting in a bid for additional to the additional and to the baseline. Some of the implementation of the NISFAS Ministerial Committee. The final year program is one of the key recommendations. It was not couched in this way in the report, but it is what was worked on within the department given the availability of resources and what would perhaps work best for the country given the availability of funds. So one is the final year program and academic success resulting in 100% loan conversion for the final year loan scheme. Extension of loans to the N1 and N2, that was a key recommendation for the FET. The second recommendation related to FET was that the funding was 80% of the total cost, and that would increase to 100%, and that has been already taken on board. The review of the NISFAS loan book was a recommendation. This committee was, last year, we reported on the findings of the report, the review of the NISFAS loan book. Alignment to the National Credit Act, we reported on several measures which had been taken, quite detailed compliance to the National Credit Act and some of the work that had been undertaken. Restructuring the processing of loan applications, and work has been done on that as well. And legislative changes, several legislative changes will be coming to the House in 2011. These range from Section 23 of the Act, which relates to loan repayments, as well as to provisions for expanding the spread of skills at the board level in order for there to be proper oversight and appropriate expertise on the board, given the large amounts of funds that are actually managed by this board. We felt that the legislation was insufficiently framed, and was framed in the context of a fund which just started off with a small amount of $45 million and which then grew more than 20-fold over the last years. And given the additional allocations that we have and the complexity of the loan management system as well as the bursary loan conversion model, that the board expertise needed to be expanded. We did have a call in the Sunday papers on Sunday this week for nominations to the NISFAS board. We have a new chairperson to the board, and we have some additional members to the board as well. We have a turnaround task team to oversee rapid implementation of organizational strengthening at the NISFAS organization. There's a review of all existing debt management policies and practices with a view to compliance with the National Credit Act, as well as to what is best for the students that we are servicing. A review of the institutional allocation model. There was a substantial detail provided in the NISFAS review that funds should follow need, and that the current allocation model did not always follow need. So you would find institutions where the percentage of students would be almost 90% of the student population would qualify for NISPAS, but they would be receiving an allocation that would be less than an institution that did not have such a high percentage. This is quite a complex model because it's based on fees at a particular institution, the actual cost of study. What the board has done this year is to revisit the allocation model, not fully, but revisit it and look at patterns of demand and reorganize funds according to that. So that is something that has already taken place and has been communicated to our institutions. A major area that had to be addressed was the historical debt issue and how do we manage historical debt. And we are working on some solutions to how do we deal with the issue of historical debt, because as you will know that in some cases students do not graduate because of debt issues to universities. Thank you, Jacobson. And I trust that I've covered the areas required.
Any additions that the chairperson of the board would like to make?
Chairperson, thank you very much. I think this is a very detailed kind of presentation that has been done by the Acting DDG. And at this point in time, it is suffice to say that from our side of the board, we are working very close with the NSFAS management in order to make sure that all these details are being fully implemented specifically. Thank you very much.
May I take this moment to permit members to then interrogate the report?
Thank you, Chairperson. I have one question on the NSA. The percentage, I'm trying to follow, unless if I miss. I didn't hear anywhere where we see it, the percentage that is expected to be gained by the students. I mean, they get the bursaries, they get this money, the loan. But when they repay this money, it's like they repay in huge percentages. I wonder if one should try a prima facie information on that one. Can we talk of the information? Because if you have borrowed money to go to school, and after that you work for ages for that money, it didn't change your lifestyle. Can we hear the percentage that they have? Or is it, if you get 6,000, you give them 6,000 back? Or you might give them 18,000 back? Can I check that one? Thank you.
Is NSFAS still going to do the presentation, or we are the department that has been done by the department, then we're going to ask NSFAS?
You are free to ask any question.
Okay.
The questions that you're going to ask, they go to the National Department of Higher Education and Training or to the board. I wanted the board to reinforce what the department had said, and they were comfortable with that. And that saved our time, but it allows you the opportunity now to reflect on the report.
Well, thanks, in the course of last year, there were several protest actions by students in historically disadvantaged institutions or universities. And most of that stemmed from some accusations and finger pointing. The students saying monies are not being paid out for our tuition fees, and some blaming NSFAS blaming the department to some degree, or NSFAS blaming the institutions, universities, university management in that regard. I just want to understand whether this time around there's effective coordination between these institutions so that there's no problem. You know, we can't anticipate protest actions in this particular regard in line with the pronouncement made in this particular regard, so that almost every student is being taken care of. As it is said, those who are supposed to get outright registration fees paid out of them, is it happening? You know, or there are challenges in that regard, so that we understand that. The other, in the previous years, part of the money that would not have been spent or unspent funds will be from critical areas of a particular sector. Would have money reimbursed for them, and ultimately you'll find that there are no applications that would utilize that money. It may have to do with persons with disability or on scarce and critical fields that ultimately you'll find that if it's meant for students in that regard, either from disadvantaged backgrounds and so on, you will find very few of those who will apply, and therefore funds will remain there, not being shifted and so on. Is the current arrangement such that if there are such funds earmarked for those and ultimately they don't come forward, you are able to do a quick shift of that into areas where there could be more need? I just want to get that clear, not to say there's something that regard when we are not sure is going to happen. The last one, part of the problem, to some degree, this one may require perhaps legislative changes and so on, but I just want us to be clear on it. It would relate to the majority of students whose parents are within a particular salary bracket or threshold which wasn't necessarily covered by NSFAS. And those particular students or their parents not also being able to access loans, to qualify for loans in the or from the banking institution, financial house, and they happen to find themselves in between not being catered for by any particular instrument. If the reviewer of the recommendations there somewhat are able to cater for those, or again they will be lacking in the cold, nobody will be able to attend to them. Or how are we addressing that one in particular? Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. Three short questions. The first one is just an explanation for the drop-off in the expected figures for undergraduates last year, the 2010. Your graph showed a drop. Has that still got to do with the decision 12 years or how many years before about the five-year-olds going to school, yes or no? And the second one is NSFAS, which I think is one of the most wonderful developments over the last decade in this country. We hear how many learners they are assisting. My question is, what percentage of deserving learners, those that would qualify in terms of one would expect that they would be successful at their studies, and yes, they meet the grade in terms of the means test, what percentage of learners are still being turned away and cannot be assisted by that? And my last question is just, does NSFAS also speak about the possibility of again granting to learners bursaries by government, whereby those learners would be contractually obliged to come and work for government? You know, we've spoken in the past about how many of our teachers in this country qualified as teachers because they got bursaries, which then, you know, expected of them to come in and teach at public schools, etc.
how many of our government departments also, you know, contribute, and is this not an area which should be developed to a far greater extent so the government can build its own timber for the next years in terms of young graduates coming into government's public service? Thank you.
Allow them to answer. Then we will take three hands and I'll go in.
Chairperson, can I do the easy one first and then refer some of the more complex issues to discuss as well? Just to explain that the drop in undergraduate enrollment, I'm just going to take that first, is one that we hadn't anticipated. It's really based on students enrolling, and so it was not projected. It's not one that is easily explained. I'd like to say that we have, based on the ministerial review recommendations, taken into account the fact that each year universities have to turn away students because there isn't a NSFAS allocation. This is a reality of the fiscal purse that we have available to us. It's not one that the universities are to blame for or NSFAS is to blame for, because it's one that we need to work on, exploring whether there are other resources that can be utilized or brought into bear in order to assist, because it is quite clear that the need clearly outstrips the amount of funds that are available. When we put in our bid to Treasury, just the university's branch itself had projected a bid of $5 billion that would be required over and above the allocation. As you will see from the additional allocation, we weren't totally smiling when we received the additional allocation, because our bid was actually for a quantification of the actual need that was out there. More than 30% of our students at undergraduate level are on some form of student financial aid or the other. We wouldn't be able to indicate totally accurately at this stage like what percentage are on Berkeley, but 30% of our student population. If I take 30% of, approximately 550,000 undergraduate students, that's a significant percentage who require financial aid support. We are working on, first of all, trying to find ways of utilizing different streams of funding to boost the National Student Financial Aid Scheme, as well as the management of bursaries from various different government departments. So we are managing for the Department of Agriculture, for the Department of Social Development, for the Department of Basic Education in terms of the Funza Lushaka bursaries, as well as for the former Department of Labor, but which is now inside our Department of Scarce Skills funds, etc. So there are several funds which are over and above these funds. And while I'm on that topic, the answer to the question as to whether we are moving funds constantly where there is need and where there is, the funds have been always for disabilities or for scarce skills, and then we'll have unspent funds for reasons that are inexplicable, and we've had unspent funds amongst universities. So particular institutions would report underspending. And these funds are being shifted constantly and have been shifted around in order to provide funds where the need is. And that's what has been driving all the work that we have done. The institutional allocation model question. It is quite clear that significant work has to be done on the funds that are available to each institution. We are fully aware of the fact that we have a shortfall. We have a real shortfall. It is a fact, it is a reality, and we are constantly looking. I can say that on a daily basis, I think I speak to the National Student Financial Aid Scheme on a daily basis, even if it's the individual student who has phoned the office, as to whether we can shift funds from somewhere or the other in order to address needs at particular institutions. When I signaled right at the beginning that we had about 8 institutions that we were monitoring quite closely, those 8 institutions are really the institutions where we know that they should have a significantly higher allocation in terms of NISFA. But we are, of course, constrained by the fact that we have a particular amount allocated to us, and that has to be spread and shared. And one of the areas that we are going to be exploring as a matter of urgency in this year is whether we need to shift the model from institutional allocation to student allocation. In other words, instead of so that maybe what is required is that students apply centrally for a loan and, you know, can take a voucher or something and go to the university. But that is, of course, quite a complex process, and we can't destabilize. We've got to keep the plane flying while we're fixing, as our minister says. I'm just quoting him. So that is quite a complex process that is required. In terms of the upfront payments, all institutions are aware that if a student is a NISFA student and has qualified for financial aid, then on completion of the form, the upfront payment is waived and claimed back through the NISFA allocation. So we have, in fact, we had a workshop on Friday to reinforce this and other matters with financial aid officers. NISFAS has sent out a circular dealing with the management of upfront payments, and so we are attempting to manage that quite tightly so that students are not turned away just because they don't have the funds. I have said this several times, and so has our DG, that they should phone the department if they have a problem. And we have been dealing with these students. But if a student qualifies for NISFA, the upfront payment can be claimed through NISFA, and the student is not required to actually provide the upfront payment. This is a process that we've been running for the last 3 years, and I must say that we've improved rather than regressed in terms of our performance in terms of this. The missing middles, which the member referred to, the current threshold for qualifying for NISFA is 122. It's determined more or less by each university, but 122,000 is the cutoff. Given that just within that particular band, we have needs that outstrips what we can supply, there were proposals in the ministerial committee which we are pursuing, but none of those proposals are quick, ones that can quickly be effected. But it's not as though we've left them. We are pursuing these quite carefully. There were some recommendations on how could we find a way of providing funds in a different manner or different model to what we would call the missing middles. The other question related to the loan repayment mechanism and the debtor management policy. And I'd like to refer that to actually take up, because the debtor management policy is one of the areas that is on the board's agenda. It's been on the board's agenda as a standing item constantly, but is being discussed again this week.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, the repayments on NSFAF loans are income contingent. So what that means is that once the debtor is employed and earns above the threshold, which is 30,000 rand per annum, then the repayments are based on a scale of between 3 and 8% of gross income. So it's not fixed term. So if a debtor retains that repayment profile, it potentially could take quite a while. The reason being is it was intended to be benevolent and afford the debtor the ability to repay according to their income levels. As the DDG has mentioned, the board is currently engaged in considering other options as far as a policy overhaul that seeks to perhaps afford some debtors fixed repayment terms that are related to the outstanding debt and shorten the period. Of course, on the basis of affordability, Chair, if that answers the member's question.
Amplify that. I think the member says in clear terms that in your recovery efforts, your interest sometimes even exceeds the original debt. Now, as to how to deal with that?
Chair, yes, indeed. Typically, the interest rate that NSFAF levies on its loans is 80% of the repo rate. So the repo rate, we take 80% thereof and it's fixed for a period. Now, historically, what has happened is that NSFAF has not applied the in-duplum policy, which seeks to cap the total interest accrued on the capital. Now, what we have started doing as part of the loan book review is to revisit exactly that and to effect the changes where necessary. And we have engaged with some debtors that have raised the issue with us, and we will continue to do that where there are very clear cases where that has been exorbitant.
Basically, I've signaled a policy review on this question. We'll deal with that as a board, and there will be a clear policy direction. That's what we hear. And the issue of individual attention and so on, we hear it, but we ourselves are focused on a very different policy intervention so that there could be uniformity. Okay. Any questions that well answered? We can proceed from Mr. Dikovo.
Thank you, Chairperson. My question relates to the not the NSFAF one, but the statistics that were given. I'm interested in the figure of, we're looking at graduate, 12,000 graduate teachers. I guess this means annual. I'm just trying to check where the number comes from, and I'm going to explain why. Because there was a report, I think it was in 2005, by the Human Sciences Research Council on supply and demand of educators, and I know that depending on who you talk to, you get different numbers. But at that time, I think the conservatives were saying, well, 15,000, and the liberals were saying maybe 18,000 in terms of looking at the natural attrition of educators, people who exit the system and people who enter. People were saying, no, we're losing about 15,000 and only 3,000 coming to the system. Again, I'm saying these numbers are contested. So I just want to check where this number comes from. But also, this 12,000, I guess almost every time you talk to people, and I don't want to use the word reopening of colleges of education, because for me it's a political thing. You can't reopen those colleges in that state. We might need a new type of teacher training college. So whether we think the universities at the moment have the capacity to supply this number, or whether we should be looking at, I'm using the word opening now, opening teacher training colleges to meet the demand. But lastly, Chairperson, just to say, one welcomes the decision to cover 100, on NSFAS now, to cover 100% of the students' needs rather than the 80%, because there were students who even dropped out even after getting the 80% because they had nothing to cover the other 20%. Thank you very much.
Mine was the same on the top slicing and universities having their own financial policies in place and the effect that that would have on the presidential announcement with regard to full funding. Thank you.
Mine was in terms of this review, restructuring process. You know, you must be able to give us a time frame, you know, to be specific, so that at least within ourselves, we know that what is your Apple sign that you're going to work out with. You must be able to come and report to us, and you must be able to see these changes. Because if, we leave this, there'll be delays and all these challenges will continuously emerging. We must see ourselves, reaching high heights, being better, rather than, we can't each and every year, we come and discuss one and the same thing, we're facing one and the same challenge. You know, Honorable Makubela just mentioned today, are we facing any strikes, intending to face any, student strikes at this, beginning of the year, Some of the things that you must be able to prevent, you must find prevention measures. That's why I'm asking in terms of your review and restructuring processes, in terms of your time frame, so that we avoid delays, But also, the issue of your funding model, I'm trying to check. In looking in terms of your loan book, your implementation strategy, as we review it, you must be able to look the finer details that will avoid, challenges in the near future, because we can't have a document that always comes with a little bit of holes. It must be a refined document that's going to be able to address almost all challenges. But yeah, the other question is that is the NSFAS intending to change the manner in which student apply for loans? You find the student apply this year and the following year to apply. The student uses the very same document that he uses or the very same method that he uses previous year, but the challenge that that emerges that this student was recommended and qualified in the previous year with the very same document, but this year going to be turned down. Those are the challenges that emerges. I'm trying to check whether are you going to try and improve the system, maybe try to find that a student has applied and you look in terms of the performance, and if he still qualifies, just comes and signs the agreement, because I think it's one of the systems that will be much more easier, so as to avoid all these other challenges. Because if that is not being addressed, surely you are expecting students to come and complain each and every year. One poor student that qualified previously, if I'm coming again to not getting any assistance. But also, Chair, I'm trying to check. I'm happy that you're saying the university, in Mpumalanga and Northern Cape, they are coming into place. We must be able. But what I want
we can't always speak in parables, facing the community. Saying, no, the university is coming, this is coming. Until when? Until all the floods come and whip up all the nice places. It can't. You must have a particular time frame. You must be able to put your own systems in place. Because every time when you ask these questions, no. Everything is in place. The university is coming. You must be able to say the university will be there in 2013. For an example. We're giving at least a clear vision to say everybody must look, what's happened to that. But the other thing, last year, I'm not like one of Macau and I say last, but last year. But I'm saying, what is your monitoring system in terms of the accommodation? I've taken note that the accommodation system that is provided by a university, there's the inconsistency. Other universities, provide the same university that, the universities that are in Cape Town. The other university are just checking, some of the figures. Was charging 40,000 per year. The other university or the other student, has paid 25,000. That's consistent. What measures do you monitor that kind of thing so that you don't find also NSFAS being exploited by these universities? Because it's some of the other issues that you must be careful of. Because it really hampers on our students. And also in terms of your pocket as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Some of my remarks will be more reflective, if you like, and there may be comments, and probably here and there will be questions as well. I will speak beyond today, if you don't mind, today and beyond, in terms of my remarks, but also I'd like you to take to the minister, through the chair, the sentiments that we have not seen him in a while. And therefore, we would really love to have a conversation with you, because I think that some of the issues that we are discussing would love to pick his own brain in terms of what he thinks about them. Chair, I can say that our higher education and training landscape will be as strong or as weak as the basic education landscape. And therefore, for me, today and beyond, I would have loved to have seen or to hear in the future, rather than via the media and so on, what the basic education steps are being taken, so that we don't harmonize something that we're not familiar with. Because at higher education and training level, we're harmonizing already something that exists. So for me, there is a flow and an intended flow from primary to secondary to high school to education and then to the marketplace. So somehow, Chair, I'd like to have the meeting of the two heads between the basic education landscape and also the landscape of the high, and because we cannot fix at this level things we do not understand where they emanate from. And so this is really the issue. Secondly, the higher education and training landscape is a vast field, as you can understand. We've got universities that are research kinds of universities. We've got universities that were never merged, they were left like that. We've got universities that were merged, some are comprehensive, and others are universities of technology. We have alongside that the FET colleges. We have alongside that the CETA landscape. For me, it is all okay because it happens at this level of higher education and training. But where do we find one another at the end of it? We've had the summits and all of these, and each of the summits have had their own outputs and so on. Where is the common conversation? At what point do we converge to say this is higher education and therefore? So I think that we really need to do that. There seems to me to be like South Africa is waking up to skill scarcity this year. No way. It's been like that. It's been happening. The universities of technology, they used to be technicons before. what's going on with their skills output? It's like they have never been there. We're waking up to the FET, which is fine, because it offers us more post-school opportunities. But how are we able to determine and track what these universities of technology are doing today? I do not want us, and the minister knows this for a fact. He has said it, but he also knows that we are not going to, I hope we are not wishing humanities away. He knows this is a sentiment. And we don't want to also, because the science and technology aspect of higher education is as important as the next thing. We will forever need historians in this country to capture the history of this country. We will forever need to have the anthropologists to capture and protect the cultures of this country. We will forever need theologians. We will forever need a whole lot of things. So I think that somehow we need to balance the things that we want and the things that we don't really think. I think that teachers of science and technology are as important as the skills themselves. Because if you do not have teachers that are teaching these types of things, then you're not going to have anything that's coming your way. Chair, the last one, I don't want to speak about the NSFAS. I come from the days of TEFSA, where NSFAS was an improvement on how TEFSA was not working. And I dare to think, and I don't know what will be the improvement on NSFAS. My issue is, and I do understand that there is a whole lot of a need for money and so on, but beyond this, is it money only that is making NSFAS not work? That's just the question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Mine will be firstly on the experiential learning that is needed. Again, I will come up with one example of a student from UKZN who is sort of now a dropout because he has done engineering, but he cannot get the 26 weeks experiential learning from the companies or the industries that are there. As to say, is there a plan even with the universities of having that partnership with the industry so that our learners can end up somewhere? We need these skills, but the way the learners are frustrated, really, I think we need to have a mechanism as to how are we going to assist our learners in doing so. Secondly, on the issue of NSFAS, again, I'll make an example of what has been happening in UNISA in Devon. As to say, NSFAS, we know that, yes, in every institution there are these offices, maybe there's the style or the way they're doing it, they're awarding these loans to students can be different. But we have seen a very inhumane way, or the way the students are being treated, where they will simply get an SMS to say, come to an institution. I'm telling you, some were sleeping on the road just because they want to be in front in the line so that they can, they're not even assured that they are going to get that loan, but for more than two nights, sleeping on the road just because they want to have access on NSFAS. As to say, is there no way of managing the way NSFAS is being awarded to students? Because really, the way it is happening, it paints a very big, bad picture around the issue of NSFAS as to how it is being awarded to our learners. To more especially the needy ones, because they've got no option. They have to sleep in those streets just because they want this assistance to be given to them. Lastly, Chairperson, on the issue of accommodation, I've been a little bit covered, but I was worried when it was said the task team that has been set will only give the report at the end of March. That's to say, we did not realize last year that there is a problem of accommodation, or even a year before that. It's a long program that has been there. Now, for the task team to report in March, what is the plan there between now for the students that will be getting in for this year? Because definitely, the report that will be getting in March, it won't assist us for this year. Are there any plans in any places to say what is it that you are doing? Because really, for me, to say that something will only be reporting in March, meaning that we don't care. Not that we don't care, but we need to know what is it that is in place for the students for this year. Thank you.
Um,
perhaps I can begin with the accommodation task team. This task team was only established last year. That doesn't mean that there's nothing happening in terms of expansion of accommodation. The work of this task team, the terms of reference were gazetted last year and quite clearly signal that we are looking and planning for the future, given that we understand that there is a shortfall. But because there is a task team and a report doesn't mean that we have done nothing. We have allocated significant amounts to build new accommodation in the last five-year period. In the last meeting, we had broken down the allocation per category, and I can present those figures again in terms of creating new spaces. The purpose of the task team, very briefly touch on, the purpose of the task team is to explore whether there are different models that can be utilized in order to increase our capacity. So we understand that there is a need, but that does not mean that there's only one model that can be used to suit the students. So this task team has an extensive mandate to explore all possible options, including funding and financing options, which is quite important because it's bricks and mortar after all. And I think one of the other members had asked that we should be on the alert about the price differentiation. And one of the important areas that this team has been focused on is getting a sense as to whether from the minister's side we can determine what is the minimum standard that is required in terms of accommodation based on a comparative analysis of the 23 institutions? And what is the costing? As you know, there are fee differentials across our higher education system with fees ranging from 10,000 per annum to 120,000. Depending on the field of study or depending on the qualification you're studying for. And this is something that will be explored in the funding review that will be taking place. And I say that will be explored because it's only now that it is emerging through the review of the National Student Financial Aid Scheme that there is a close connection between the income streams that are available to a university, the contribution that fees make to a university's income, and how do we begin to make sense of the actual cost of study. This is a very important initiative and has not been explored sufficiently, and we are expecting the funding review committee to work through these issues, as well as take and learn from areas that we've already understood through the ministerial review committee. In terms of the Mpumalanga issue, in our strategic plan that we presented, we had put some timelines because part of this is related to funding allocations, but the processes in terms of the task team's work in order to identify, etc., are clearly stipulated. We have not presented this in detail today, but that is quite clearly outlined. And it would be preempting the work of the task team for us to begin to say, this is the way in which it will evolve. And noting also that there is a difference in the issues that confront Mpumalanga versus Northern Cape. There's not one approach for both, because one has to take what's available at those both provinces. In terms of NSFAS, Chairperson, I'd like to just indicate that we have a comprehensive operational plan in terms of the
actual rollout like timeline for when legislation. But I thought for the purposes of this meeting, because we were covering so many issues in this meeting, I just presented briefly. But should the committee require, we can present our detailed timeline, and it's quite methodical, because as you will know that changes in debtor management policies impact on loan recovery, and loan recovery impacts on legislative changes that are required. So it's quite a complex process, and we can present on that should it be required, but I didn't do so in that way, primarily because I thought the focus was just on enrollment registration and NISFAS, and but we can do so should it be required. In terms of the NISFAS allocations, Chairperson, the top slicing issue is one of great concern, but as I had indicated, there is a shortage of funding, and institutions are sometimes propelled into this top slicing mode in order to help many students with a little bit of money across the board. This, of course, we have learned doesn't work. Part of the issues that we will be addressing is that for this final year program, we will not be allowing the top slicing issue to, because then we are defeating what we're trying to achieve. And that's why that is being centrally managed. The application will be centrally managed. I don't see an immediate solution to the top slicing issue until we get additional funds, because as I indicated, that the need, of course, outstrips the amount available. In terms of students applying for NISFAS in 1 year and then having to apply in the next year, these are different loan agreements that are signed. And in terms of the credit regulation, each time you apply for a new loan, you need to demonstrate what your current circumstances are. As you know, students applying for loans have to indicate whether parents are employed, etc., and circumstances change annually. So it is correct that a student could apply in a particular year and be forced to provide all the details in the following year. We have made changes in terms of disability. Prior to this, students with disabilities had to demonstrate each year that they had a disability, and that was changed so that it's a once-off and the disability allocation was granted. In terms of students qualifying in 1 year and then falling short, it is, of course, about timing of applications and about the funds available. And sometimes you're just not on the list and you become one of the students who the shortfall is the shortfall. And there's no way that additional funds can be, procured from. In terms of the institutions and the problems that affect our institutions, we are monitoring, but we can't always solve the problem. So if there are a finite number of spaces at a particular institution, we understand that the demand can create problems at that particular institution. We may predict it, but we may not be able to avert it. We can avert it by other communication strategies. If you've noticed in the last 2 weeks, there's been a lot of media coverage as to what are the other options that are open, but we may not be able to avert crises at particular institutions. The same applies for the NISFAS allocation. We have indicated what is the amount available to the state, and we have indicated that we are aware that at particular institutions there will be a shortfall. And being aware doesn't mean that we can solve the problem instantly, because there isn't sufficient funds. And we are constantly trying to move funds, harness funds, utilize funds from various other
departments, bursary schemes, etc., in order to meet the demand. But monitoring the institutions, but we have been quite proactive, but we can't always avert a crisis. Sometimes it is going to be, I have one at the moment that is on crisis mode, and I do know that I am trying, but we will not be able to solve all the problems because there are huge issues of historical student debt, insufficient mismatch allocations, prior debt, students who have failed and want to re-register but who now do not qualify for NSFAS because they haven't met the academic requirements. But these are issues that can't be quickly resolved, but that we can work towards strengthening our systems. On the teacher education, I think that's the last one. On the teacher education figure, the figure was given to us by the presidency and emanated from the planning, from the PNE section of the presidency, Minister Chobani. This was the figure that was allocated. What we have done in the last 6 months is, it's not work that we're doing for the first time, but it is understanding what can our universities absorb in terms of enrollment, identifying whether there is blockage in the system in terms of production of graduates. As you know, and we presented sometime in the last 2 years, the work that has been done after the roundtable on teacher education, which took place in 2008. And that quite clearly outlines the needs of teachers and does a provincial breakdown in terms of teacher needs. But as you know, that teacher needs, supply and demand is not a very simple task, because one has to do it phase by phase, as well as learning area by learning area. And we have been working very closely with our institutions to align needs with the supply chain, taking into account attrition and, natural attrition, as well as, inflows into the teacher education system. It is an area that we will be exploring, but it is an area that we have not done, begun work on, as to whether there are other ways of providing opportunities for teacher education training. And so the issue of the teacher training colleges is one that we will be exploring, but we have not begun work on that as yet. But we do have two documents which are quite significant on the table, which were presented last year, and that is documents on supply demand, as well as on the teacher education plan for the country, which is a document shared with the Department of Basic Education, which is the employer, and our department, which is, in a sense, a supplier of new teachers, as well as upgrade of teachers into the system. Chairperson, I think I've covered most of the areas, and I do apologize if I've left out any.
Chair, just to follow on what you said, that we still have got some time, just one question. The last time we interacted with NSF, it was their system could not be able to track who dropped out and so on. So it was easy, they couldn't account on that number. And it means you can still allocate when people are not in the system anymore. Is the system anywhere towards dealing with that now, as we speak?
Maybe without them having to answer in general terms, are you able to track beneficiaries of this law in San Padre?
We are able to track chambers.
Let me just say this, covering what the members are saying. Members have actually studied the review committee recommendations, the entirety of the report. They know it by heart. But I could see they were very generous. They did not want to interrogate you about this and that, but there are very serious things that we are concerned about. Now you said that universities on their own determine criteria to allocate money that belongs to NSFAS. That is inappropriate because there must be a clear, definite policy by NSFAS, which every institution must comply with. But that is clear. Now, this report has been there for 8 months. By now, we should be getting a very clear response that, look, in these 8 months, we have a clear policy in terms of the means test, and that you can't have an orphan reapplying next year that I'm an orphan. We've covered that. We can't have an old age parent reapplying the same way that I'm old aged, because that can't change. All those things. Look at that so that we move somewhere high. Now, we spoke of systems. The committee did not want to say whether you have information storage system in place now. We don't want to ask that. Because we can't wait for the minister to approve this report. That is just a clear operational issue. That NSFAS must have records of all applicants, all loans, everything. Then the recovery unit will know that, by this period, this person will have finished, they start checking, is he getting employed? All those things must be dealt with. And the DDG said they've got a very detailed operational plan. We want to also allow an opportunity, not to say, give us tomorrow, because in one committee, they requested another plan. The following morning, it was a three-page plan. It was a thumb suck and so on. Now, we want to give this department and NSFAS an opportunity that maybe within 3 months, give us a detailed, comprehensive plan that tells us, look, in South Africa, we are clear now. This is our criterion for NSFAS. We are clear now. We've got very strong facilities. We know all the data of our clientele. We are clear now in terms of how we're going to allocate monies to universities. This is how we're going to do it, focusing on historically disadvantaged institutions where the poor people are. And as far as it's not known in the rural communities, that's what I had to say. This is our strategy, an aggressive marketing strategy, so that people in the villages, in the schools, would have access of information in relation to NSFAS. We need such a thing to be able to move. We don't want to say other things because I'm trying to prepare you for what other committees are going to require of you. Internal systems, audit committees, are they there to check how we are operating? The audit internal function, do you have it? All those things. Because other committees are going to ask you very soon about these things. And we would not want to appear like we are them at the moment. We want to be pulling one another with you in that direction of making sure that we stabilize the system. Because once you don't tell us all the things here, and the committee says we are ready to move, and then tomorrow we are told, in fact, we are as good as non-existent, that will be a problem. So I think the board, I don't know whether it is fully constituted, meaning around the record, possibly it's not. Let's have an indication, when are they going to be fully constituted, so that they're able to do their work, insofar as the report says that you're even doing administrative work, you know. now. You need to look at all those aspects so that by next month we could be saying we are somewhere. Because today we thought we should be, we should not be sensational. We should be parental in approach, and we have seen that the committee has been very parental. We have heard how members are speaking. Now, that only gives us an opportunity to say, let's reflect on all the challenges. The only thing we request to is to say the task team, the response task team that we have, must make sure that it runs this process to avert turbulence in universities, in technicals, I mean, in the FET sector and so on, so that those that qualify are able to be taken on board. Well, I've seen already on the, some universities are saying they are closing on the 4th of February in terms of registration. But we see the long queues. So you need to be able to intervene in those areas and say they must be flexible so that we should help our people. I don't know if any members would like to say anything before I close, or that represents our broad thrust in terms of our thing, medical state promotion. There's agreement. We would like to thank the officials of the department for their presentation, and the LSFALS board members and officials. And we wish you will act accordingly. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I can't. I'm not coming in.